This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crescent City Connection, beautifully twinkling purple, gold, and green in the background here from the eighth floor of the, what is it this week, Regions Bank Building. And I'm going to tell you that we still got a little bit of drizzle around. That's going to hang around until later on today. As I swipe here, and I should have swiped before, but sometimes, you know, you're swiping, you get behind on that. About 11 o'clock, that's when it should go away. Then the sun comes out. Tomorrow should be just beautiful. Highs of 67, 71 on Wednesday with plenty of sunshine. Little chance for showers on Thursday. Highs of 70, then going into the big Mardi Gras weekend. Friday Gras, sunny, highs of 67. Samedi Gras, 69. For a high with plenty of sunshine. Then you got Toth and Shaka Sunday, highs of 70. Lundi Gras looking nice with a high of 71. And then Mardi Gras, maybe a chance, a 40% chance for shower size in the mid-70s, but we're still way out on that. Robert Hogan joins us now, professor, department chair, political science at LSU. Good morning, Dr. Hogan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
In spite of us having a good time and Mardi Gras and everything else, the stuff goes on in Washington, which in a way is its own carnival. Before we get to the budget, I chose last night to watch 60 Minutes instead of watching Tom Hanks talk about the raccoons. And I wished I had chosen Tom Hanks and the raccoons because I think I'd have enjoyed it more. But for those that are so worried about the country or those that are so pleased about the way the country is headed, because let's face it, there has been a sea change. That's not inaccurate, do you think?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, some people are saying what's happening is, you know, the negative side is that it's a constitutional crisis we're seeing. From another perspective, this is the best dream that they could possibly think of happening. You have someone shaking things up. I mean, I like to think of it. I think what we are seeing is a sea change. It is I would argue, a constitutional reordering of things. You have a president who is coming in and quite literally attacking the bureaucracy, something that, he campaigned on. Say what you want about Donald Trump. He is, in fact, fulfilling his campaign pledges in a way that we have not seen presidents do with such vigor and with such speed, and is doing so by saying, the belief that a lot of conservatives have had for a long time, that government is out of whack, it's too big, We're going to attack it, and attack it they have, going after the bureaucracy first. I think that's the thing that's a bit surprising. Most of the time we have recognized, and certainly we like to teach in American government classes, that the biggest way that presidents can have an influence on policy is through the legislative process, getting Congress to go along with him to change and alter policies and alter the bureaucracy in that manner. He's going about it in a completely fundamentally opposite direction. He is saying, hey, I have authority that other presidents have not declared up until now that I can basically, eliminate bureaucracies. I can restructure them. I can fire large parts of them. I'm not even going to have to fund a lot of the things that government does that I don't think it should do. Several years ago in the 1990s, we had discussions about, you know, having giving the should we give the president a line item veto, right? Mm-hmm. Supreme Court said no. But this president has basically said, I'm taking up the issue of the line item veto, and I'm declaring it. Money that Congress has appropriated, that Congress has voted on, he's saying he's not spending. Bureaucracies that the Congress created, he's not going to implement policies that they have created anymore. So this is fundamentally restructuring things in a way that we've not seen before. Now, the question is everyone okay with this? And the Democrats clearly are not. Right now, they don't have any power to stop it. But the most amazing thing about it is, and I think the part that I think is intriguing and also troubling, is that Republicans have not stopped him at all. They are fully willing to allow the president to have a new set of powers that he's never had before, and they're willing to give it to him, and they're not willing to stop it. And I think getting back to what I said at the beginning, this is a constitutional restructuring, reordering, I should say, of what's going on. The president is taking a huge amount of power that he didn't have before, and members of his party that are in the opposite or in the other branch of government are willing to let him have it. And, that has fundamental implications beyond the things that Donald Trump wants to do. It is restructuring our system of government.
And some people are happy about that. Some people are not happy about that. But as I was going to sleep last night, I was thinking about you're coming on, and I always think about what's coming up. And I'm thinking, maybe 20 years ago, this may have been what you wanted, but maybe now you don't. Or maybe you didn't want it 20 years ago, and now you do. Or maybe you wanted it 20 years ago, and you still do, as far as president taking on a bureaucracy, but you don't like it because it's wrapped in a Donald Trump package. And we'll take a break here, Professor, mm-hmm. and pick it up when we come back, because
sure.
And I'm just trying to be fair about all this, look at it from an objective standpoint, because traditionally, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, presidents have tried to influence foreign policy because they can't do anything with a bureaucracy. It's bigger than any one president. The other thing we can address is that Donald Trump is not seizing power that there was from anybody else. It seems as though there was a vacuum that was created by others failing, maybe specifically Congress, to do their jobs and pass laws. So he's saying, all right, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. And at least that's the way I see it. We'll see what Dr. Robert Hogan thinks. We come back. Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU, 620 Now Traffic, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Dr. Robert Hogan, Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU. We invited him on to talk about the budget, but I just thought we'd talk about, in general, the way things are progressing. It seems like a while ago since President Trump was inaugurated. It wasn't, but man, he's just going 1,000 miles an hour. And I think, Professor, it's kind of like LSU running the football, in that he's going to keep doing it until somebody stops him. Thoughts?
No, I think you're right. I think that the metaphor that some people have been saying, he's with all the executive orders, he's throwing everything on the wall to see what sticks and what the courts will accept and what the Congress is willing to accept. And the courts have we've gotten a mixed bag so far at the federal level. These things go usually to the district level first, and he's gotten some pushback on some things. Most notably, his executive order ending birthright citizenship, which is spelled out in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Other things, he's being able to get his way on these things. I do believe that this is a major, as I said, reordering of things that we have not seen. And it's different than, I mean, all presidents want to get control of the bureaucracy. You know, there are wonderful stories of Nixon, you know, having screaming fits with, you know, his cabinet secretaries. You know, isn't there something you can do to get these bureaucrats to agree with me and to do what I want them to do? And there is this inherent tension in the bureaucracy, the political will, you know, I get elected to do something as president, you should do it. But then you also have experts, you have expertise, you have rules that should be applied evenly without regard to partisanship. And I think Trump's approach to this is that he's president. He should elect, he should be able to put people into these positions that share his ideology and his worldview, and they should change policy immediately. You know, that's fine, and that's something we should probably have a conversation about. The concern is, as I said earlier, is that, you know, he is taking a set of powers here that's new and different. And I think the question that a lot of people who like what he's doing need to ask themselves, hey, I like what he's doing right now, but what's going to happen 4 years from now and a Democrat is elected president of the United States? What's going to happen if they utilize that same sort of broad power that presidents that Trump is assuming here? Are they okay with a Democrat in power instituting a progressive agenda that he snaps his fingers or she snaps her fingers and the entire bureaucracy falls in line with their ideology and worldview? Is that what you want? Or at that point, will you be concerned about expertise and the fair application of law? And I think that's, you know, this is an inherent tension and a question that, you know, the country has grappled with, all countries and governments grapple with. You know, how much do you want democracy to play a role in these things? Should people always get what they want? At what point should experts be consulted and fair and application of the law be applied?
It's not, I think some people have a problem with the approach of, and I'll make the analogy to weed and feed your lawn. You can either, you know, the lawn is not perfect. There are weeds in there that need to be weeded out. But do you want to kill everything? And then how long does it take you to get anything to grow again? Or do you want to be selective about it? And I think that's what has some attention of some people, right?
Sure. And Elon Musk wielding literally a chainsaw is a wonderful metaphor. It's how they're going about this. I mean, they're going about it in a way that seems, you know, extraordinarily swift without much concern for the implications. And that's something that I think people across the ideological and political spectrum should be concerned about.
And then to carry the metaphor forward, if you do kill everything, how long does it take to grow it back? And then how much mud will you lose that washes off while you don't have anything growing there? Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. Dr. Robert Hogan, Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU. Mike Dettelier joins us as we come back. WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Give me a take here text at 504-260-1870. It's been a busy first month for the president. How would you describe and how do you feel about what's going on in the country? 6:30 now. Time for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL. I'm looking at a tweet here from Eagles Nation. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson made a comment on the picture saying the same face in that meeting, too. Even after the Super Bowl, after a team meeting going over parade prep, Vic Fangio made the defense stay back after to go over the game. He gets to the second half and he says, this is unacceptable, unacceptable, 22 points. He wants perfection. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, goes to Sports Talk. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine, and that doesn't surprise me. Vic's an old-school coach. That's a lot of people that really believe that he got fired in Miami. He took over in 2024 in Philly, but in 2023 he was with the Dolphins because he was too hard on the players. So that's fine line there, but that doesn't surprise me about Vic one bit.
You know, what does kind of bug me is that he was here, what, 9 years?
Yeah, he was in the Jim Mora time frame. He started in the old USFL and ended up when Jim Mora took the job here with the Saints. He came in, and his title was really linebackers coach, but he really coached the outside linebackers. He coached Ricky Jackson, Pat Swilling, and he would always laugh about it. I didn't coach him. I just sort of pointed him in the right direction because Coach Sidwell coached the inside linebackers. He was the defensive coordinator, but he coached Sam Mills, Vaughn Johnson, that group. So, man, Vic's been around a long, long time.
So I guess he didn't want to leave Philadelphia because the Saints are signing Brandon Staley, right?
And Brandon actually kind of is a protege of Vic.
Okay.
He worked with him when Vic was defensive coordinator in Chicago with the Bears. He was the outside linebackers coach. When he was the head coach with the Broncos, Staley was his outside linebackers coach. And then he took the job with Sean McVay and the Rams defense as the coordinator, and they had some really good defenses, though. You did have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. That's two really good players at that particular time of the game. Became the head coach with the L.A. Chargers, and he rode the rocky road of a head coach. Basically, he was a 500 head football coach with the Chargers, and what most people remember him by is that wild card playoff game. They jumped out 27-0 on Jacksonville and ended up losing that game. And I think it's either the third or the fourth largest comeback ever. And I think he never recovered as a head coach from that game at all, Tommy. I don't think that game sort of stuck with him the rest of his career.
Tell me about the relationship between Kellen Moore and Staley.
Well, when Staley's last year in L.A., he brought in Kellen Moore to run his offense. They had a ton of injuries that year, especially in the backfield, and to Justin Herbert. And so that's the relationship. He was there that one season in 2023 as Brandon Staley's offensive coordinator. So goes to show you kind of how things change. They stay the same. And that's just business. It's a connect-the-dot business. You've worked with these individuals before, and you trust them. You've been in those meetings. You see how they work with players and how they work with other coaches. And so, you know, when Kellen got the job, it had been widely speculated that he would hire Brandon Staley. And it took a little while, but he finally got done. Last year, he was working with the San Francisco 49ers as a sort of consultant linebackers coach.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, because when you got the Dome Patrol, it makes you look like a pretty good coach. When you got Aaron Donald, it makes you look like a pretty good coach. What do Brandon Staley and Kellen Moore and managing the rosters and the salary cap, now that you're starting to get the staff in place, what happens with the roster? We'll talk about that when we come back. Mike Dettelier, our guest, WWL NFL analyst, co-hosts of Sports Talk, 650, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 655, 5 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. So whenever we talk about new coaches, I always think about the Bum Phillips thing, talking about Don Shula saying he can take Hizen and beat Yorn, or he can take Yorn and beat Hizen, and that goes to coaches adapting to the players they have or bringing in the players they want to adapt to their scheme. How do you balance all of that, Mike, with Brandon Staley, with Kellen Moore, with the offense, with the defense, with the play salary cap challenges? Jump in where you feel comfortable.
Okay. You're a lot smarter coach when you got the football horses.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. You can be the best coach in the world. If you don't have the talent, you're not going to win. And this football team needs an influx of really good young talent. And the way to do that is drafting right or drafting correctly and finding players that fit what you do. That's the other part of it. Shula did it like very few could, in that he could take a player that might not be the exact fit for him and get it to work. Very few coaches are like that. And so I think it's a key. One, you got to find the most talented players you can get, but they got to be the right fit for you. And I think one of the knocks on Staley with the Chargers were that he didn't adapt well to some of the talent that was on that football team, especially on the defensive side. He didn't adapt well, and he had become an analytics guy, and that is part of the game. But he relied on it way too much. And so it is all about acquiring talent, Tommy. Bottom line, You got to be able to get better talent and young talent on this football team. It's great to have the veterans. I'm all for that. Same thing like in a coaching staff. But I think the good young talent wins in this league. You look at how the Eagles have won, how the Chiefs have won, and you know, that consistency is built upon the fact that they have been able to get that mix of a really good core piece of young talent and mixing it in with veterans that can help along the way. And it's the same way in the coaching ranks. So I would want a guy like Brandon Staley on my staff because you know what? He's been there, done that. Kellen Moore's never been a head coach. Mm-hmm. And Staley can help him through some of the difficult times that will happen. Not might happen. They will happen during the season and also during the offseason.
Free agency coming up. What changes are we likely to see?
Tommy, they ain't got a lot of money to spend in free agency. This team has normally kind of sat out the first week to 10 days and then get in on the second tier of not as expensive price free agents. But just think about last year. The Eagles didn't spend a lot of money on Zach Bond. He wasn't a very heralded guy. Look what he turned out to be. Mekhi Becton, their offensive guard. He was a bust in New York as a first-round pick. There wasn't a lot of suitors for him. Fit. Finding the right fit veteran players for your football team is key.
Could be fun to watch it unfold. Thank you, Mike. Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. We come back, we're going to talk about rail service between New Orleans and Mobile. It's set to start in June. I don't know about you, but you know how they got the commuter service between Connecticut and New York and all that stuff? I'd love to have some kind of commuting train to go between here and there. As long as when you got off the train, you were able to get some transportation. 7:14, sky's darkening here in the CBD. Tim checks the color weather radar and tells me that the rain is north of the lake and moving that way, so be aware of that. We'll have to see what happens. Supposed to be gone by around 11, 1 o'clock today, and then it turns sunny and nice for the rest of the week for the parades. We're joined now by Knox Ross, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. How you doing, Knox?
Doing great. How about you?
Do you play golf?
A little bit.
Man,
that
would be a hell of a name for a professional golfer, Knox Ross. Tim Zimmerman's Master Control watches a lot of golf. Don't you think that'd be a good name for a golfer, Knox Ross? Man, I can see that on the bag, on the bottom of the bag, and everything else. So tell me about Amtrak as we serious up here. Tell me what's going on with train service from New Orleans to Mobile.
Well, the big thing is that the construction has started on the platform in Mobile, which is the last thing that has to happen. So, that's underway. And so that really begins to solidify up a June, I hope for, and we plan to, a June start. And we're very excited about that.
So tell me how this is going to look if I'm looking, when it does get going. First of all, when is it supposed to be fully operational?
Well, June.
Okay, so
barring something unexpected, it's June.
Take me as the rider experience. What's that going to look like to me?
Well, it'll have two or three coach cars, which are 85 people, two abreast. So you don't have any middle seats like on an airliner.
Wait, say this again.
You don't have any middle seats.
Mm-hmm.
So you got two and two seating all the way down.
Okay.
And really nice, like, first-class size seats.
All right.
And you'll big windows. You'll be able to look out and see the view and the scenery. And the scenery is quite good, especially between New Orleans and Bay St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It's just beautiful. And you'll have a cafe car. We're working with some local vendors to have some local food and beers and things like that to offer the rider. And there will also be a small business class area with plusher seats, a little quieter area to do business or to just enjoy the quiet.
So what happened? So I would get on at the train station, right? My kid took a trip to Chicago on a train because they wanted to do it a while back, and I think they had the seat where they turned around, the scenic view or something like that, where he turned around and looked out the window. But that's not going to be like that on this, is it?
No, it's so on the train to Chicago, that's a double-deck train. Mm-hmm. And so they were in a viewliner car there that has the roof. So we won't have that. This will be a single-level car, much like if anybody's ridden the train to Meridian or Atlanta, the Crescent. They're similar to those cars. And but there'll be a single level car, but these will have larger windows than the cars that you ride on going to Meridian and to Atlanta. And
so, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to stop at Bay St. Louis, Gulfport, Biloxi, Pascagoula before I get to Mobile, correct?
That's right.
So what happens, where am I going to stop in those cities? Because here's my concern. And Knox, I love old movies, and I watch, you know, and you watch what happens on a commuter trains, like when they go between Connecticut and those areas into New York, and there's a thing to do, or there's transportation when you get off of that commuter train, when you get to one of those cities, right? So what happens when I get to... Where am I gonna land, or whatever you call it when a train stops? Land, dock, what do you call it?
That's a depot.
That's the unique thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. That's the unique thing about this service, I think, compared to almost anything in the country. Every one of these stops is going to be right in the middle of a downtown. It's extremely walkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take Bay St. Louis, it'll stop in the Depot District, and the city has done a tremendous job of upgrading that area. There were recently some articles, I think, in the New Orleans press about the new businesses right there by the depot, and they have the golf cart shuttles that take you anywhere you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
In Gulfport, and right in the middle of downtown, walkable to the aquarium, the casinos, and downtown Gulfport had all sorts of things, Artist Alley and restaurants and things. Downtown Biloxi, it'll be not too far from the stadium, so you're not far from, say, the Beau Rivage mm-hmm. or the Hard Rock. And all the things that are there, you can walk down to the restaurants and things there. And then in Pascagoula, the same way. In Pascagoula, the thing that's going on there is Chandelier Brewing is rehabilitating the depot there as a brewery. And so you will pull up right to a Chandelier Brewing brewery, which I think would be tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Now,
go
ahead.
And then, you know, downtown Mobile is going to be right by the convention center, right down by the bay. Mm-hmm. And Mobile is just extremely walkable, beautiful hotels, great restaurants, everything right there. And, I mean, New Orleans just speaks for itself. So it's something that you don't have to have a car, which is really nice about it.
So when it comes to cooperation between the cities and coordination, how's that going between New Orleans and Gulfport and Bay St. Louis and Pascagoula and Biloxi, I think I mentioned already, and Mobile?
That's terrific. We've got, you basically have three convention visitors organizations, one for Mobile, one for New Orleans run by Wallagey, and then a coastwide organization. And we have regular calls, thinking about how to market it, thinking about how to roll it out. Those things are beginning to come together. Everybody's very excited about it and see the great potential for it.
Let me take a break. We come back, we'll pick it up with Knox Ross, Chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. I can think of nothing more delightful than getting on a train and say, taking a ride to Bay St. Louis, hopping off, going through the different galleries they have there, having some lunch, maybe having a couple of drinks. You don't have to worry about driving, because by the time you get back on the train, you'll be ready to drive yourself home. Or going the other way, coming to New Orleans and having fun if you're listening in Bay St. Louis or Mobile, wherever you happen to be, because we do go that far. at this time of day and come to New Orleans, have a good time, then get back on the train, sleep it off, and get ready to go home. We'll talk about pricing and so forth and what kind of would it be every day? Would it be certain times a day? We'll talk about all that when we come back. 721 traffic. I think it's a great idea. I think it's all in the execution. 721 traffic now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Knox Ross, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission, about, and I wanted to ask you, Knox, this is not proposed. This is going to happen, right? This is going to start in
June.
Yes,
sir. It's going to happen. We've been working on this a long time, man. It's almost hard to believe, but it's going to happen.
Hang on a second. Let me tell them. That's all right. You're excited, and you should be. But people, you know, get in the car and tune in at different times. Rail service from back and forth between New Orleans, Biloxi, Gulfport. What did I leave out? Pascagoula? Did I leave out?
Yep, that's it.
And Mobile. So tell me, how often, every day or how many times a day?
Twice a day. That's the whole key to this. So you can do. You were explaining it perfectly in the last segment. You can go out to the bay from New Orleans, spend the day, enjoy the shops, enjoy the bars, enjoy whatever you want to. Get back on the train in the evening, come back to New Orleans at a decent hour, and have a nice day out. And I think one of the big things back for next Mardi Gras season is being able to enjoy night Mardi Gras parades in New Orleans. You can ride in from the coast, mm-hmm. spend the night, take in the Mardi Gras parade, be back at your desk at 10 o'clock the next morning, you know, if you're in Gulfport or the Bay or somewhere. And it just makes an already very livable place even more livable.
Did you say back at your desk?
And better. Yeah, or back at your house, or, you know, if you wanted to come to a night parade, you could be back at whatever you're doing in Gulfport early the next morning.
Yeah, I think desk is pushing it. I think desk is pushing it. Let's just say back in Gulfport. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how much this would cost yet or not?
It's not going to be an expensive thing. And, you know, it'd be much less than parking a car for the day in the CBD or something. We'll have that very soon. Just as soon as we get all the contracts finalized, which those are in the final stages, we can roll all that out.
Any thoughts to, like, regular passes or anything? Any discounted passes?
Actually, we're working on that. We've had some interest from some of the casinos in being able to, you know, give passes to their good customers. So, yes, that's something that we're working on.
What about, somebody texted in about golf clubs and luggage or those kind of things. If somebody wanted to, say, go play golf in Mississippi, will they be able to take golf clubs with them or not?
I think so. I mean, we'll have a baggage car. I don't know that there'll be baggage service at each stop, but that is definitely something we want to be able to do. And I believe that they'll either be able to take it on the car and put it at the end of the car or I mean, that's something we'll definitely try to get worked out.
Now, I'm not trying to embarrass anybody or call anybody out. I'm just being honest here. My kid did have, not my kid, but the people, the group, there was some trouble on the train, and security was probably not as good as it could have been. That's not you. That's the trip to Chicago. This was 10 years ago. But for people that are wondering about, there will be security on the train in case somebody has a little bit too much to drink or gets a little rowdy or something else?
Oh, yeah. So you've got two levels of that. You've got the onboard service. You have conductors and the onboard service people who are trained people, very good at what they do. The other people is Amtrak has a police force that are sworn police officers that operate out of New Orleans. So the nice thing about this train is it's a short distance train. You don't have as much time to have problems. But you also have the police forces in each city. So you'll be quickly at the next stop. And they'll be waiting on whoever they need to take off, and they'll be happy to take care of them.
Parking is free at Amtrak at the station?
Well, probably not in New Orleans, but everywhere else there should be good parking. I think in Mobile there'll be some parking, pay parking across the street, but at the Mississippi stops it should be.
But when I dropped them off at the Amtrak here, unless something changed, I don't think I had to pay, did I?
No, you didn't, but I mean, if you want to leave your car overnight or something.
Oh, I got you. Well, look, stay in touch, Knox, because I think it's a good idea. I'd love to get on a train and ride it to Bay St. Louis, maybe Biloxi, spend the night, and then come back. I think it's a great idea. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good luck. Knox Ross, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. We come back, we'll take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday morning markets with Mark, Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, enough of the falderal. Time to get to Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Monday morning markets with Mark, where we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Hi there, Mark.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Is that a word, falderal, or did I make that up?
I think you made it up.
Hey, real quick, before we get to Monday morning markets with Mark, you're not a big one for government regulation. Neither am I. But don't you think
Correct.
It's time they stop showing The Godfather on TV? My gosh. Every time.
It's a classic.
It's like, let me find something to watch. Okay, great. The Godfather again. I get it. Tell me what's going on. Speaking of settling family business, tell me about the business of this country, Mark.
You know, we barely got off the phone. We were talking about markets since the beginning of the year, trading sideways, waiting on what the Fed is going to do, or the market's going to come back, retail sales, what's going to happen going forward. New administration, right? A lot of changes, a lot of guesswork, a lot of people sitting on the side. And we were also saying that came from late last year, the Fed saying, well, the market is precariously high. We keep setting records. And just last week, the S&P and the Dow set other records. Not the Dow, excuse me, S&P set another record. And it's like, well, that's, you know, dancing on the head of a pin a little bit. So things are priced for perfection, meaning that all the economic news that comes out needs to be more supportive than not, or else we're going to see some dramatic changes. So, yes, Friday we did see a little bit of that. S&P was down 1.7%, as was the Dow. And for the Dow to be down 1.7, it was down over 700 points just within the day. And just some of the news that came out after we talked, the retail sales in January fell almost a full percentage point, the largest drop since March of 2023. So almost a two-year span there where this was the largest drop. And bad weather was said to be one of the factors, but it seems like, you know, people would normally buy whether there's weather or not. It's called a computer and Amazon and those types of things. But being down a full point is about a 12% annualized rate of fall in retail sales. So when retail sales are making up 70% of GDP, there's something to be worried about there. And I guess people are going to be looking at the February numbers to see if that's going to rebound or continue a downward trend. The S&P Services Index fell into contraction territory. It was supposed to come in at 52.8, down from 52.9, just one-tenth of a point. It fell below 50, which is the contraction territory. So that was a fairly large plunge there. So it's now at 49. And, of course, that again, goes hand-in-hand with, like, the retail sales. This is a service index, especially the greater New Orleans area, largely a service economy. And that could be a big deal for us. Consumer sentiment for February dropped more than expected, and the first quarter GDP was forecasted to be less than 1%. A number of 0.6% is starting to be discussed. And within the same time, Tommy, this week we're going to see the fourth quarter GDP, the final revision. So last year GDP was, if the numbers are going to come in right, about 2.3%. So it started the year at the high twos, early threes, and it ended the year at 2.3. So we're seeing the trend there, and if first quarter is 0.6, that's not going to be good for markets. And we've been talking for the past two or three Fridays about, you know, how people can maybe, if they're choosing to move things around, if you're 26 years old, you don't have to move anything around because you've got a long time ahead of you, and you'll see a lot of business cycles. If you're 73, that's a different story. Within that, the Manage the Money program on Friday, we've been saying, well, you might want to take some equities off the table there and switch into something with less volatility. But if anything, this morning we're looking at a pre-open of about up 300. So a lot of this, what happened Friday, might erase itself. But then we've got a full week. You know, some weeks are very sparse, and this week is full for economics. So we've got consumer confidence that is coming in, but is expected to be down. Initial jobless claims is coming in this week and is expected to be up. Okay, so not two for two, not good. Mm-hmm. And let's see, the GDP second revision, I've discussed that already. But then we have personal income and personal spending. Personal income is expected to be up. I'm glad of that. Every time it comes out, every month, we've been looking at it for months, when personal income is up, and for the majority of the time we've been reporting up figures, the personal spending, it tends to be up as much or even more. This time it's going to reverse. So they'll expect it to reverse. So income is going to be up 0.5 and personal spending up only 0.2. So, Tommy, all the, you know, the several of the ingredients that between last week and this week centered around the consumer or retail sales or things that are going to point to GDP. And I think that's why the forecast is starting to dim when it comes to first quarter GDP. 0.6 is not a good number.
All right, let me take a break. Mark, we could pick it up. We come back and we'll talk about, you said price for perfection. I know I listened to you, so we know what that is, but maybe people don't know what that means. And I think it's a very important phrase. We'll also talk about how all of this fits into the Fed with interest rates and their preferred inflation. I think that's going to come out, you told me, this week. And if that happens, it just seems like then as soon as...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Things get one way, then we're going to change it to get it back the other way that we didn't want it the first way. Then we're back to where we started. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out. Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, our friend, President, CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, taking a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. More when we come back. 751, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 757, 3 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Around these parts at this time on Monday, we talk to Mark Rosa, President, CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday Morning Markets with Mark. Mark, earlier you used the phrase priced for perfection. You taught me that a couple of weeks ago, but for people that don't listen all the time and may not understand what that means, tell us.
Well, first of all, it was said by one of the Fed governors at one of their meetings. It's like it's a very precarious place. So if the markets continue to set records, meaning they're at their all-time highs, well, that's you're kind of dancing on the head of a pin. Unless things come in to really propel the economy past that point, if the underlying economy is strong enough to maintain those levels. So the moment that it's not, then they come tumbling down. And that's what we saw a little bit of earlier this year. We had a pullback, if you remember, and then Friday back 700, about 750. So, you know, we're waiting on digesting the news. And last Friday was several points of news that really weren't priced for perfection. Saw some weakness there. And this week we've got some weakness that is already forecasted. So the final thing Thursday, the personal consumption expenditure, it's a mouthful saying that's the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, and it's expected to be coming in right as expected at 0.3, but that's a 3.6% annual rate, one that the Fed itself said is too high. So it postures them to say, well, we might have to lean into this, meaning that we've got inflation that's stirring. But between that and all of the kind of less than stellar news that I was talking about this morning, it's going to put them on the sidelines again because they're not going to drop interest rates for sure, and just based on the recent news. And then they're probably not going to raise interest rates either because there's not enough out there to substantiate a move. And, you know, Tom, they're worried about making a mistake. They lowered rates in the fall four times, and just a couple of months into the new year, they're going to start raising rates. They want to make sure that the coast is clear and the market is pointing decidedly in a way for them to take action like that.
So they're sitting
back.
You would leave us with the thought of?
Well, if we have some more news that might not be as well embraced. So could we see some more downward action this week based on coming off of Friday? Yes.
I will talk to you Friday on at 7:30 when we help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We come back, we're talking to Meg Farris, WWL Louisiana reporter. She was on with Newell last week, got a new show out. We'll talk about that, a new brand, really. Then we'll talk about recycling stuff along parade routes. A lot coming up. It's raining in the CBD right now, and that's supposed to clear up by about 1 o'clock, I think. And then the week looks pretty good. Highs of 67 tomorrow, and for the parade tonight in Marrero, the rain should be gone. A little bit cloudy and cool, high with temperatures in the 50s for that. But then as you go on through the week, the big Mardi Gras week, I guess you can call it that, 68 for a high tomorrow, 78 on Wednesday, 72 Thursday, 67 Friday, 70 Saturday, 71 Sunday, 73 Monday. Nair a mention of rain until Tuesday when they're talking about a 30% chance for showers with highs of 78. But maybe we'll need that to cool us off a little bit. Meg Farris joins us now, our friend, WWL Louisiana reporter. How you doing, Meg?
Tommy, good morning and happy Mardi Gras. I'm kind of laughing when you're talking about it's going to be, you know, pleasant temperatures. That the photographers in the newsroom back in the day, way back in the day, they used to love to go out and shoot Mardi Gras when it was warm because people wouldn't, their costumes would be a little more skimpy.
That's what I was thinking of. You know, that's exactly what I was thinking of when I said 80 degrees for a high and a little bit of rain, a little bit of, what do you call it, a mist to cool us off. Tell me, I texted Meg on Friday, Saturday, as a matter of fact, because I found myself at Home Depot, and I remember she did a Valentine's story about men and women meeting each other at Home Depot. And I texted her and said, hey, Meg, I hate to bother you, but I had to go to Home Depot. I'm wondering, since I'm here anyway, where do I find the chicks? And I didn't find anybody. Meg, what happened?
Well, the women we interviewed and the women on TikTok who claim that this is where you find a man, they all said, oh, in the lumber department, the concrete department, you know, the manly, heavy lifting kind of department is where you go look. And one woman was so cute, she even said, I'm not going to the lighting department because he's probably trying to pick out something for his wife, so he's probably not single. Anyway, we had fun with it. There were stories about people meeting people that way, so we went to Home Depot to see if that was true. But then
I didn't have any fun at all. I walked out with light bulbs. Go ahead. Somebody texted you and what?
Someone texted me and said, but now the new craze is for men who want to go find women is you go to the SPCA and you find a woman who's fostering or caring for an animal. So anyway, we had fun with that story.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job. But tell me about, I heard you on with Newell last week. What you got coming up?
So, Tommy, I'm so excited. After 553 years in the business, I am finally, and I hope it works so badly, I'm finally getting to do a show that I've always wanted to do. I go out and interview these doctors for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and I have to boil everything down to, you know, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. And I learn so much, and I get so many messages and phone calls from people privately, people I don't know, saying, can you help me with this issue? And sometimes they're very personal issues about their health or their sexuality or some body part that they don't feel comfortable even discussing with their spouse or their doctor. Can you give me a suggestion of what doctor to go to? So having a passion to help people with their health. It's called Message Meg because people were messaging, asking questions, and it's an hour show that is going to be on streaming. Now, why is that key? Well, first of all, that is where the industry is moving, on streaming. But Tommy, I don't have to have a news director nervous wreck because I'm talking about a new type of breast reconstruction that involves, you know, saving the nipple and the areola, and the news director says you can't say nipple and areola on TV. Can I say it on your radio show, Tommy?
You just did, so I guess you can.
But here's what's important. That's important because there are so many women who are having breast reconstruction after cancer who need to know these things. And so on streaming, I can talk about it. I can have the experts. I can show pictures, real before and after pictures, and not put the black bars over, you know, certain areas of the body. But you'll appreciate this. My first show, and it got to be so long, it was 2 hours, so we divided it up into two parts. It's about the weight loss injections. And you and I have done a story on that together. And we explore, so last week, the first segment were patients, people who'd used it, a researcher who talked about why people are overweight. And it's not a matter of eat less, exercise more. Our bodies and metabolism are so much more complicated and genetically involved, okay? And then the second part that comes out this Wednesday night on streaming, I have MDs who have prescribed it, who talk about it. I have dermatologists and plastic surgeons who say, what do you do with the extra skin when you have lost a lot of weight? And then I have a woman, and yes, infertility specialists were actually seeing women who could not get pregnant, go on these, lose weight, and they're now parents. So that is one of our segments that comes out Wednesday. And lots of before and after pictures, and we go into detail. So that's our first segment. And what you do, let me tell people how to get the show. So it's on WWL Plus, and that's the plus sign, not P-L-U-S. And you just download the app one time, and it's free on any device, your TV, your phone, your iPad. And you can watch the show streaming. Comes out at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, but you can go back and watch anytime, 3 a.m., 8 a.m., whatever time you want. And you can watch these shows that we're going to keep adding to.
So there's an app that you download, right?
Correct. One time download, and it's free. Like you download Netflix or something like that, but this is free. And people can watch it anywhere in the world. Just download the app from anywhere. You don't have to be in our viewing area, which you would if if it was on TV. Now, I do believe we're also going to have it on our website, WWLTV.com, so people can share links. But going to the app is easy, and like I said, on demand. Watch it anytime. Watch it in parts and pieces. You don't have to sit through the whole thing at one time. So it's just heavy on information, and I really answer people's questions. I don't want to be one of those things where I have to censor something because I'm on broadcast. So I let the doctors and the experts and the patients tell it like it is.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We'll come back talking to Meg Farish. She's got a new thing. Would you call it a show? What would you, I guess a show, right? Or
yeah, it's a talk show. Some people call it a podcast, but we produce it. So it's more like a talk show.
With pictures. A podcast with pictures is what it is, what you're talking about. All right, we'll take a break. Pick it up. We come back. 821 Traffic Now, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, WWL Plus. If you download that app, you will have access. Wait, now, is your show part of that or only that?
Okay, so WWL Plus has a whole bunch of programming on it. So Message Meg, that's the name of my show, that will be on it. We'll load new segments constantly. But we have news on it. We have our newscasts that are repeating that you can call that up. We have David Hammer Investigations on it. Our executive producer, Stephen Malosov.
Wait, let me get back to Message Meg and the time that we have left. So are you bound by any rules at all, or can you show whatever pictures you want? I mean, so long as they're tasteful and medical, or say whatever you want, or talk about whatever you want?
Yes. In fact, we show before and after pictures in our next segment that comes out a week from this Wednesday, on Ash Wednesday, of breast reconstruction gone bad and the doctors who fixed it and made women whole and beautiful again. And we don't have any black bars over anything. And then
no pixelation, none of that.
Exactly. Mm. And coming up, we're going to talk about hormone replacement for men and women. And we have sex experts on who are going to talk about your life after hormone replacement, after menopause, after andropause, which is the equivalent in men. And we're going to talk about lots of things with hormone replacement. You know, my father was an OBGYN, was a pioneer in this, had me on it since day one. And there's still women who think it's bad for you. And we're going to get to the bottom of it with MDs and all sorts of experts and people who are on hormone replacement.
So are you looking for show ideas constantly? Will they always be medically inclined or not?
No, there'll be health, fitness, lifestyle. I hope look, Tommy, my dream is that this does well and I can explore all sorts of topics. But my email is messagemegshow@gmail.com. So if people have topic ideas, let me know. Maybe we'll have one, a dating, meeting people type one. You know, I mean,
well, you know,
I don't
what I was know. Thinking of, I was thinking maybe since you're not bound, maybe you could have one on cursing, on swearing.
Okay.
And just get some of the city's most prolific swearers. And I'm thinking in terms of content, I think people would tune in to see people that they would never expect in another way to just let it fly. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you for mean, example, you're talking what about if, the George Carlin seven words you can't say on TV?
Sure.
Is that what you're talking about?
Anything like that. I'm just saying, if, for example, Meg Ferris had an extremely dirty mouth, I think people would say, well, look at this. Who knew that? Or anybody, or Brianna Boudreaux, is that her name? Or anybody else? Or maybe Doug Mouton. Maybe Doug Mouton, who is just the sweetest, nicest man in the world. Maybe he's got a foul mouth. Who knows? What do you think?
Okay, that's how careers are ruined, because that stuff lives forever. And so, but yeah, I'm alone at home. No one's listening, and I'll really stub my toe or fall and hit something. Yeah, it gets it out of you.
But would a career be ruined if you did it on that platform, on a streaming platform?
I'm not going to do it on that platform, because there's lots of other stuff to talk about. But yeah, everybody's got, you know, every now and then you need to let it out.
Just
you know, you sometimes just need to let it out.
So if somebody has a show idea that's better than that, they send it to you how?
messagemegshow@gmail.com.
All right. We'll be looking for it.
Watch the show.
First episode airs when?
The first part is already out, and the second part of Weight Loss comes out Wednesday night, and you can watch it anytime on demand.
All right, WWL Plus is the app, and then it's Message Meg, and you can do it, not now, do it at 10 o'clock during Noel's show. Thank you, Meg. 8:30, time for WWL First News. Rain now in the CBD, and you might have some where you're driving. Headlights got to be on if you got the wipers on. And again, please, no flashers, because people are texting that in, and that's a pet peeve. And for doggone sure, stay off the phone. That's not going to help anything. Rain should be over with come 11 o'clock or so, and then highs of 64, so cloudy cool for the parade tonight. And then tomorrow, as we get into Mardi Gras, 70 degrees for a high tomorrow, 72 on Wednesday. I'm not saying anything about rain because there's no mention of rain. Cloudy, high of 73 on Thursday. More sunshine Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Highs of 68, 71, and 72, respectively. Then we get to Lundi Gras. Cloudy, highs of 74. And Mardi Gras Day, as it stands now, they're saying a 30 to 40% chance for showers, highs in the mid-70s. But there's still a lot of time, so we'll have to see. Anna Nguyen joins us now, External Affairs Manager for New Orleans Office of Resilience and Sustainability, to talk about Recycle That. How you doing, Anna?
Good morning, Tommy. Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras to you, too. Tell me about Recycle That. What's all that about?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about Recycle That. This is actually the third year that we have this partnership between the city, New Orleans and Company, Glass Half Full, and Grounds Crew, as well as dozens of other partners, to work towards making Mardi Gras more sustainable. We started with just a few recycling hubs, collecting beads, glass, cans, the first 2 years, and we really started to expand now into plastics. This year, we're really excited. We've got 8 recycling hubs along the route during the daytime parades. Since Sunday was canceled, we're actually going to be running our hubs on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be running again Saturday and Sunday during the day. But we are excited about not only the amount of expansion that we're able to do, we've also been recycling glass at 15 different bars. We're calling it the Mardi Bar Wars. So far, we've recycled 14,000 pounds of glass in just the first 2 weeks. And this year, we're actually offering what we're calling recycling rewards. So not only can you drop off beads and glass and cans at the stations, you actually can enter a daily sweepstakes rewards prize. So we've got things from, you know, tickets to Galactic during Jazz Fest, to a 2-night stay at the Chloe, to Jazz Fest tickets. And it goes down to even, you know, getting gift cards to Stein's or Zazu's, or even, you know, getting some Porgy's restaurant gift cards. So we're really excited about all the different partnerships and the donations that we've gotten to make this program even bigger than last year.
Seems like the companies are embracing it. What about the crews themselves?
Yeah, so we are definitely seeing this trickle-down effect, right? So over the last 3 years, we've been running this operation, and we've slowly started seeing crews shift more and more towards more sustainable throws. Yeah, this year was the first year that Crew of Ferret went completely sustainable. They had no plastic beads at all. So you might have caught in some really cool glass beads. I got some cool wood beads. And then some sustainable things like backpacks. Like I know this year I caught a backpack from the crew of Cleopatra that it's going to be my new Mardi Gras backpack that I'm excited about. Even the crew of Hermes and crew of Rex, they have packages now that they're offering to their riders to throw out red beans or jambalaya or coffee. So it's really exciting to see the trickle-down effect that we're seeing with crews and parade goers.
Yeah, I don't mean to make you Arthur Hardy or anything here, Anna, but do you even know how we got started with beads?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that it started around the 60s, and it just kind of grew and grew, especially as imports from other countries were just much cheaper for producing the beads. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, beads have never always been a part of the equation when it comes to Mardi Gras. You know, just like you and I, we're from New Orleans, born and raised, and we know that Mardi Gras is more about the celebration of coming together and having a good time. And so, you know, we want to sustain that for years to come through Recycle That. We just want to make sure that people are thinking about the ways that they produce waste or the ways that they divert waste throughout the season as well.
I've been here all my life, and I never even thought about that before. Next time we have Arthur Hardy on, I'm going to ask him that. How do we get started throwing beads? Because why not? Why not throw something you can use? We'll talk more about sustainable throws and recycling when we come back with Anna Nguyen, External Affairs Manager for New Orleans Office of Resilience and Sustainability. Y'all can text me at 504-260-1870. What do you do with all of the stuff that you catch? Do you just throw it away? That's a lot of plastic. And one other very practical part of this is getting it off the streets and keeping it out of the drains. And we'll talk more about that with Anna Nguyen, External Affairs Manager for New Orleans Office of Resilience and Sustainability. When we come back, 851 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 8:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Anna Nguyen, External Affairs Manager for New Orleans Office of Resilience and Sustainability. I'm getting a text here, Anna, from people talking about plastic recycling, and plastic recycling is extremely complicated, and if it were only as easy as glass, but the important part of this is keeping them out of the storm drains, correct?
Yeah, so we want to make sure that we keep plastic beads, trash out of the storm drain, because when it's raining like it is today, it can oftentimes clog the storm drain and prevent it from, or actually cause the streets to drain, to flood a lot more than it would if we didn't have that trash there. And so, you know, during the 10, 11 days we have of Carnival, just along the uptown route, over 2 million pounds of waste goes to landfill from just the route, which is crazy to think about, because that's beads, that's trash, that's cans, that's plastic. And so, you know, we are very familiar that plastic is a complicated thing to recycle. So we actually have this really cool sorting station that we're calling Recycle World at Louisiana and St. Charles. And if you're in the area, I highly encourage you to go check it out. It's this very large sorting station where, you know, we just want to make sure people are recycling. So you'll see along the routes these little X frames with green bags that have both aluminum can and plastic bottle recycling. So what we do is we actually take those bags, we bring it to Louisiana and St. Charles, and we'll sort through the plastics for you. So we want to make this as easy as possible for everyone to recycle during Mardi Gras, which is why we've set up these operations so that, you know, not only are we showing people what we're doing, but we're also engaging parade goers, crews, everyone who wants to partake in Mardi Gras.
Do you have a website, Anna, where people can go and find out all about this?
Absolutely. It's recyclethat.org. You can go check it out. It's like Who Dat, but Recycle That.
I think it's a great idea. As I've grown older, I've just gotten to hate waste of any type or variety. So congratulations on what you're doing. I hope the crews embrace it. And why not throw something you can use, right? Like St. Patrick's Day. Throw cabbage, throw even soap or ramen noodles. Thank you. Have a great week. Have Mardi Gras. We'll be back. I-909 making our way through a rainy Monday morning, and I saw this story a while back, then I saw it again, it got my attention, so we invited Egon Rinderer on, defense expert in cyber warfare against weapons systems, transportation assets, and critical infrastructure. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning. Good to be with you.
I wanted to talk about cranes that are made in China that are at the ports and how pervasive this is and how much of an issue it could be if it is an issue. So I guess maybe we'll start with how many Chinese cranes are active at ports?
Yeah, it's about today by most estimates, it's somewhere between 80 and 90% of the gantry cranes in the United States. So that would be, you know, the big cranes that are lifting containers. And that's not just maritime ports. That includes things like multimodal shipping ports, rail ports. So really any of the large ports that you find in the United States, you're generally going to find about 80 to 90% of those cranes are made by one of three Chinese manufacturers. And those three manufacturers actually make up the majority of the gantry cranes found worldwide. So of the top five manufacturers, the top three are of Chinese origin.
You know, I'm looking at a picture of this. A gantry crane, that's the thing that looks like, I don't know, like an inverted L, maybe an upside down L, if you want to call it that. And then I guess it jacks up and down. Is that the way it works, Egon?
Yeah, so it's basically, they can look any number of different ways. They kind of look like just a big iron infrastructure, mm-hmm. So an upside down U or an L. And they're just picking up the large shipping containers and stacking them, right? It's a very simple job, but they're massive, and they basically control our ability to move heavy goods in and out of ports in the United States and worldwide, for that matter.
I'm sorry. I know your time's limited. I'm trying to cram as much in as I can.
Sure,
I don't mean to interrupt you. When it comes to China cornering the market on producing cranes worldwide, how did they get in that position?
Yeah, it's the same way they get in that position in everything that they produce. There's a national subsidizing of the cost of that so that they can sell them much cheaper on the international market. It's no different than what we see with consumer electronics. It's no different than what we see outside of the U.S. with vehicles, right? The Chinese government subsidizes the cost. And you have to remember the Chinese government also has a policy that they want to create a giant intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance network. So anything that they produce that has any sort of electronics in it just becomes part of that network sort of by nature. So it's in their best interest to subsidize those costs.
Countries play the long game, but China plays the long game, right?
Right.
That's accurate?
Yeah, from their perspective, this is all an investment, right? So the more that they can develop that network becomes really critical to hopefully avoiding an outright war, but it comes critical to the Chinese expansion policy that they have. So that network gets used sort of on an ad hoc basis, but when they need it, it's there, it's pre-positioned. They have an ISR network that has global reach. And really, they have a bunch of witting participants in helping them install that network across unwitting nations.
I tried to take some notes, but my highly prized Bic stick pen is running out of ink. Did you say between 80 and 90% of the cranes around the ports in the world are Chinese?
That's correct. In the U.S. and globally, yeah. That is according to a study that was done by the Carnegie Endowment. There's a lot of additional studies that are out there, but the Carnegie study is kind of the magnum opus on that topic.
So the worst possible case part of me says, well, then China controls 90%, 80 to 90% of the ports in the United States and worldwide and could shut them down if they wanted. Am I making too much of a lump?
It's interesting that that's where you went. What most people go to is the intelligence collection aspect of this. And you'll see a lot of articles out there about this, where those cranes can be used for collecting intelligence on what's moving in and out of ports, you know, what ships, what flag they're on, what
sort of
goods are moving.
A little bit, if we can, Egon, before we get to my concern, let's talk about the intelligence gathering capabilities that they have and what the Chinese could do with that or are doing with it.
Yeah. So if you think about it, these cranes have, you know, they're basically big computers. They have lots of RF connections on them. They have phone home capability. In other words, those cranes will send data back to their manufacturers for the purposes, legitimate purposes, right? Maintenance data and health data and things like that. But these cranes are covered with cameras, they're covered with antennas, they're covered with computers, and those can be repurposed to do any number of things. So they can gather, you know, photographic intelligence, imagery intelligence, RF intelligence, signals intelligence, telemetry data from ships. They can also use those cranes as launching points, right? So unlike the United States, which is sort of from the perspective of the defense network, we have separated electronic warfare and cyber warfare. China doesn't do that. The two are combined. And so they take full advantage when they have a platform like this. They take full advantage of that platform for the purposes of not only collecting intelligence, but sort of pre-positioning capabilities when they want to. So if there's a ship in port and they want to opportunistically collect intelligence on that ship or launch an effect against that ship, they have a pre-positioned platform to do that from.
Launch effect pre-positioned platform sounds relatively benign, but I don't think it is. Go into that a little bit more, if you will, Egon, please.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the problems, right, is that the defense industry uses very sort of sanitary terms for things that are actually pretty serious things. And so there's lots of acronyms that fly around, and I think the general public, it's kind of lost on them. But the reality is, you know, when I say launching an effect, that is, I want to install malware on something that doesn't belong to me, and that thing is sitting 500 yards away. If I can do that via an RF link, as the Chinese government, as the Chinese People's Liberation Army, I have a platform from which I can launch those sorts of capabilities over an RF link to a ship that's sitting nearby, right? If we don't think they're doing that, we're being naive.
Egon Renderer is our guest, Chief Technology Officer at Shift 5, former, I hope this is still accurate, is it, Egon? Former cryptologist?
Former. Yeah, former CTO at Shift 5.
Okay,
yeah.
And a cryptologic technician at the U.S. Navy, with the U.S. Navy. So
many years ago, yeah.
So I guess, do we know, let me take a step back here because my mind is blown at this. You know,
sure.
The emoji with the head blowing up, that's where I am right now. So China can effectively track what 80 to 90% of the worldwide ports are moving, aware whatever happens to be at any given time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they have a presence in 80 to 90% of the ports worldwide. They can use those platforms, as I described. But don't forget, this is sort of a mosaic effect, right? They have those shipping platforms. They also have the phone you're carrying in your pocket. They also have the electronics that you're carrying in your pocket, right? In the defense world, we have what's called NDAA compliant electronics, which simply means they don't have Chinese parts in them. Well, in the consumer electronics world, that doesn't exist. Everything is mostly of Chinese origin, or at least manufactured in China, assembled somewhere else, something like that. So this is one of thousands of platforms that they have to collect data from. This just happens to be one that you, and this is, it's interesting that you alluded to this. This also happens to be one that they have control of. So in a conflict, if they wanted to shut down our ability to move heavy goods, they could do that. And that's the thing that you can't forget, right? It's not just about intelligence collection. It's about the ability to shut down ports at will.
That's what I was getting to. And we all know what happened during COVID with how fragile supply chains
that's right.
are. And I, you know, I see a quote here from a story. This goes back to 2024 in September. You say we kind of sold our soul here. And that, boy, I got to tell you, that to me sums it up, because if what I'm hearing and what I'm interpreting is accurate, it seems as though China could paralyze 80 to 90% of the ports in the world if they chose to. Is that being melodramatic?
No, I would argue that that is absolutely accurate. And it doesn't matter if you have the locomotives and the ships to be able to move the goods if you can't load the goods onto them.
What percentage of goods, products, et cetera, do you know, arrive via the ports?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know a percentage off the top of my head, but I would go back. It is. I would go back to the example you gave of COVID, right? And you think about it's not just
COVID,
you know,
exponentially,
durable goods.
Right?
Not just, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Because it's, you know, people think, well, it's, you know, heavy equipment, it's durable goods, it's electronics. It's also food, right? It's also the thing, like, the things that we need on a steady ongoing basis is if there's any interruption in that supply chain, we might have 2 weeks worth on hand, but it gets exhausted and then we have no more inbound.
But we're talking about in this instance, unlike COVID, not supply chain interruptions here or there. We're talking about supply chain interruptions everywhere at 80 to 90% of the ports in the world. Accurate?
So, yeah, opportunistically. So wherever somebody decides we want to interrupt that, you know, the ability to move goods, push a button and make that interruption. So it can be used very tactically. It can be used very strategically.
So theoretically, the Chinese could, and I'm just making stuff up here, but they could invade Taiwan, for example, and say, you know what, we're going to do this, and if you try to stop us, we'll just shut your ports down. Accurate or not?
Yeah, I think it's possibly that. I think what you would probably more likely see is an interruption of port activity just prior to, just looking at Chinese doctrine, mm-hmm. they would most likely cause an interruption just before an invasion. That it would probably be a precursor, but it could also act as a threat to others who may be considering coming to Taiwan's defense.
When it comes to launching points, and what was that other sanitized term you used? Prepositioning, was that what you said?
Prepositioning and launching of effects, yes.
Launching of effects. Could our cell phones be used similarly, maybe to a smaller scale, or not necessarily when you add them up?
It's interesting that you asked that. There's a reason that the federal government banned Huawei devices, for example, in the United States. There are other Chinese manufacturers that are not allowed to sell cell phones or cell phone equipment in the United States. There is a hard ban on using Huawei equipment on telephone switching networks in the U.S., right? There's a reason for that. There's a reason the government is looking at banning TP-Link routers, right? There's a lot of people that are upset about that because TP-Link is a very popular home wireless router. It's less expensive than the competitors. It's more capable. People love them, right? And when the government starts talking about banning those things, it upsets people. But there's a reason that we do that. There is a reason that the federal government, when they take that strong a stance, people need to understand that there is a very good reason for that. And it's to your point, it's because those run-of-the-mill consumer electronics pose a national security threat. So yes, in cases where the Chinese have taken ownership of a device, whether that's directly or indirectly, it could be because they've installed malware on a device, that device gets used as part of a command and control network or part of a capability to launch effects or collect intelligence. They want as broad a net as they can cast for intelligence collection and for effects launching.
You're a defense expert in cyber warfare against weapon systems, transportation assets, and critical infrastructure. You do this for your life's work, so I can't even imagine. You've forgotten more than I'll ever understand about this. But do you sometimes worry about you don't know what you don't know in terms of what the Chinese can do and can't?
Yeah, I think we all do. There's a lot of us that work in this space. There's a lot of people in the Defense Department who work in this space. And I think we're all very humble and we're very cognizant of the fact that we only know what we know. We're learning new things every day. Just like we try to hide the latest and greatest that we're working on as a nation, so does China, so does Russia. And so it is very much like the old days of intelligence gathering and analysis and trying to read the tea leaves a bit. That's still a very real thing. I think to some degree, the general public has kind of gotten a little bit comfortable thinking that, you know, everything is computerized and therefore it's all protected and the government's perfect and we have perfect security. We're learning just like they are. Right. We just try to stay ahead of things a little bit. I won't say I wring my hands over it, but I will say it's a lot of work to try to make sure that we're not missing anything.
If we were to ever have hostile relations with China or interaction, it's going to be cyber. It's not going to be military.
It is.
Is that accurate? The first
shot will be fired on the cyber front. And then we'll see if, you know, anything kinetic would follow that.
Or if it could, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you got it.
Real quick, somebody texted in and said, why is there no USA company manufacturing port cranes? And that goes to how we began a conversation, I'm guessing, Egon, with the fact that China subsidizes that, right?
Yeah, there are a couple of European countries that produce them. They are much more expensive, but they're also considered to be much higher quality. And they are, you know, certainly U.S. friendly manufacturers. But yeah, it boils down to convenience and cost. It's the same reason we buy from China in everything that we buy from China, whether it's consumer or industrial. It's convenience and cost.
I know you got to go. I hope you come back as I can talk to you about this for 9 hours. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Love to.
You bet.
Yes,
Egon,
sir. Thank you.
Renderer, defense expert in cyber warfare against weapon systems, transportation assets, and critical infrastructure. Goes back to the Trojan horse. I hate to make it sound like an invasion, but they're here, and we have no idea what they're capable of. 925, Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:43, 17 till 10, saw Yanoze in the hallway just now, and he notified me that Roberta Flack passed away. She's 88 years old, and a unique connection to WWL, in a way, New Orleans, and WWL through the late Robert Mitchell. And another WWL personality, Angela Hill. I know this is true because it was on her show. Roberta Flack was there on Angela's show and told the story. They released this song and they had a problem with it. It didn't do very well. And Bob Mitchell said, well, you got the verses wrong and you need to rework it. I hope this is a song. I'm pretty sure it was this one that it was and not another one of her hits. But that, yeah, it was a song that you got to reverse the choruses. The chronology is not right. You go in here before you do that. So if you reverse it, they did, and that song became a big hit and really launched her career. And Bob Mitchell, and if you go look at the Oldie King, Bob Walker's remembrances of Bob Mitchell, he did a lot for a lot of artists when he was at the Oldie Station, the WTIX, back in the heyday. So I just thought I'd pass that story along. Bob Mitchell passed a while back, and he was here at WWL after Katrina and had a lot to do with a lot of musical careers. So anyway, just thought I'd pass that along. Ollie Cosell joins us now, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. How you doing, Ollie?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm staying dry.
I hear you. Let's talk about the Pelicans, because it seemed like, and I got to tell you, man, I'm ashamed to say this, but I thought the season was over, and I realized we're just at the All-Star break. It's been a rough year for the Pels.
Yeah, look, a lot of people make that mistake, and especially if the team's been disappointing, you kind of start losing interest and don't pay much attention. And of course, there's still about, I want to say, 30% of the schedule, regular season schedule left. So 25 games left. They've played 57, and you're right. Second worst.
Wait, say that again?
NBA record.
Say that part
in the
again.
League. So, yeah.
Say that again, because that's astounding to me.
Yeah, so there's 25 games left, 30% of the schedule. Typically, the All-Star break does not come at the midpoint of the NBA season. It comes in like a final third or so. It's a little different than, say, probably baseball.
But that's a lot of season left, and the perception is just with the injuries and everything else and that tough season that they're having. Man, the perception's that move on to the playoffs. So I guess I should have checked the calendar as well. That would have helped. Tell me about last night's win.
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing. They made that trade with Toronto, sending Brandon Ingram up there, and received in return Bruce Brown and Kelly Olynyk. We thought that Bruce Brown was probably the player that we should be focusing on more, since David Griffin talked about having interest in re-signing him after this year. Kelly Olynyk still has another year. But the fact of the matter is Kelly has played a lot better than Bruce Brown, and he's showing just how important it is to rebound the ball. So in yesterday's win against the Spurs, yes, they didn't have Victor Wembanyama. Pelicans still grabbed 69 rebounds. That's 11 more than their second-best high rebounding game of the season. So it goes to show size actually does matter. And for most of this year, as people know that follow the team, they've been playing small, right? It's been Eve Missy, a rookie at center who still has to put on a lot of strength and weight. But other than that, it hasn't been any true centers out there. And that's been a big reason why the Pelicans' defense this year has suffered, Tommy. So now that we've seen size, Willie Green's playing two bigs, oftentimes at the start of the game, Pelicans are just playing better simply because they're bigger out there and they can limit the opponents to one shot.
Tell me about Zion.
So Zion's still playing. So that's a big positive, right? This is a guy that's never finished a regular season healthy. And so I know this season, like I said, he's not going to make the playoffs yet again. The thing of the matter is he has to stay healthy and build some continuity with his teammates and show improvements in his game. So the fact that he's out there while Herb Jones, DeJounte, Murray is not, I think that bodes well for the Pelicans in terms of he's the leader, and he has to start growing into that role. He's never had a chance to, really. I think there have been injuries. Brandon Ingram's been out there. But now it's kind of become, honestly, his team. So he's playing much better, Tommy, to where, yes, he can score at a high clip efficiently, but you love what he's doing with the passing. He's now the de facto point guard on the starting lineup. Like DeJounte Murray's hurt. They've gone bigger, so he's the starting point guard. Also the defense. You see it now every night with him. You see the player we saw at Duke where he's getting a lot of steals, a lot of blocks. Last night he had 2 steals, 2 blocks. And that's who he needs to be, right? That's how he can impact the game. He can't shoot the ball, right? Outside the basically the lane, he's not going to shoot the basketball. So he's got to affect it in other ways. And he's showing us kind of that all-around game we thought we would see right when he came out of Duke.
I'm seeing stories saying he's at his lightest since he's been a Pelican.
Yeah, it's obvious, right? If you just tune in, you look at him, he's chiseled. More chiseled than he was as a rookie, than really at, like you just said, any other time during his New Orleans career so far. And like I said, that's what bodes well. He's trying to do what he can in order to stay in the court. Everybody's always thought he's played at too heavy of a weight, and it's easy to point to that when you're always constantly getting hurt. Those soft tissue injuries, the hamstring pulls, you're getting those because, honestly, you're not in the greatest condition you can be. Now that he looks the lightest and is moving around with more energy on both sides of the court, you can tell that he's honestly needed to be at this playing weight for quite a while, but at least he's there now.
Yeah, I've seen it in golf where people play up or down to their level of competition, and it seems as though you could almost make a case for Zion doing the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly very true. And look, when you're one of the best players in the league, or at least there's a perception of that, you have to check all those boxes. And let's face it, he hasn't. Whether it is, you know, playing down the competition, whether it's not doing everything you can with conditioning, whether it's not being that leader, kind of that voice in the locker room that, you know, you were drafted to be. So now, like I said, I mean, it's taken 6 years. It's hard to believe that we're in year 6 of Zion Williamson, but at least it looks like he's getting there.
So he signed an extension. Take me through that.
Yeah, so this was a couple of years ago. He signed an extension with the Pelicans for 5 years. So past this year, he still is on that same contract for the next 3 years. So basically, he's tied up here in New Orleans on what's a pretty good contract, right? It's not that extravagant, $50 million, $60 million plus that you're seeing some players get nowadays. But he will be making close to $40 million next year. And look, it's worth it if he's on the court for 82 games and leading the team in the playoffs. But when he's sitting for more than half the season, obviously it's not. And that's been the problem in past years.
I get a text from somebody in all capital letters. He needs to learn how to make free throws. Is there anything, what is the NBA, what's the history of the NBA when it comes to improving players and free throw percentages? Can it be done?
It can be. There's players who always struggle with it, like, for instance, Shaquille O'Neal did. Because he was just so big, right? His hands, the basketball was like a tennis ball in his hands for like a normal person. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to shoot the ball properly when, like I said, the ball's that small in your fingers. But with Zion, he doesn't really have that problem. And we've seen at times where he really, can get on a nice streak where he makes like close to 80%. And there have been players that have shown that kind of improvement. I want to say Karl Malone came in the league. He didn't shoot the ball that well from the free throw line. But then he improved vastly, right? Became over an 80% free throw shooter. So there's instances. It's just your dedication level, right? How willing are you to put in the work and listen to coaching and advice when needed?
Yeah, you wonder if it's technique between the hands or between the ears or maybe a combination, huh?
Yeah, you know it's between the ears when you see players missing it during certain situations, which is right usually at the end of games. I've noticed that with certain players that have come through here. Brandon Ingram, his first couple of years here, he seemed to miss so many in the fourth quarter of especially close games, but he got past that. I haven't really seen that with Zion. For instance, last night, I want to say Zion missed his first 4 free throw attempts, then he went on to make his next 5 or so. Mm-hmm. So there's no real pattern with him.
It's the damnedest thing, man. Nothing changes. That's the one constant, right? That's always the same, just like bullet almost. He's at 65%, I think it is, this year from the free throw line. What's good when it comes to an NBA player, good percentage?
Well, for a guard, you want to be about 80%. For somebody like Zion Williamson, you want to be over 70. Okay. LeBron James has usually been between 70 and 80. Giannis Antetokounmpo, probably the best comparison to Zion Williamson, right? Big bully, wants to drive to the rim every time. He's the one that's languished a lot, right? He's had some up years, down years, but he's never been close to 80. He's always been either in the 60s or low 70s. So the goal for Zion is just get over 70%, right? You shoot 10 of them, you got to make 7 of them.
Tell me about injuries and next season and all of this. You hate to write the season off, but let's face it, they're not going to playoffs. Have they been mathematically eliminated?
I don't think they've actually been mathematically eliminated, right? Because there's 25 games left, but it's close to it, Jordy, right?
I mean, well, if you look at the injuries, and it's easy to, you know, I know people say you can't blame it on injuries, but this team was just decimated by injuries. And I know the Saints hired this guy, this strength guy, this wellness coach or whatever. Have you heard any talk from David Griffin about maybe hiring somebody like that or something along those lines?
Well, here's the thing. We did speak with David Griffin after the trade, and he brought up himself the topic of, no, this medical staff is fine. It's not their fault for what's happened this year. And what he pointed to was the lack of soft tissue injuries. Outside of Zion's hamstring, everything's been like DeJounte Murray, broken hand, the Achilles pull. These are the more what most people consider fluky injuries, right? And last year, this team had a sterling record under the same medical staff, right? They were as healthy as they've been for some time. So they don't want to point the finger at them.
Yeah, I didn't mean the entire staff. Just, you know, maybe a little bit of improvement here or there or whatever. You think they beat the Spurs?
I always use an extra, right, good pair of hands and eyes and such. So I hope they do consider it.
It can't hurt. Thank you, Ollie. Appreciate your time and your insights. Ollie Cassell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. 9:54, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.